Last time we were in Genesis chapter 26, the first few verses, seeing how there was a famine that pops up in the land of Canaan again, and God specifically instructs Yitzhak, don't you dare go down to Egypt during this famine. You stay inside the boundaries of the promised land, because this is where everything is going to be fulfilled. Your seed is going to be blessed. It's going to grow in number, but it will also be the source of blessing to the entire world. And as I always like to emphasize, that's about Jesus. That's the Galatians 3 teaching of the Apostle Paul. So because he cannot leave the promised land to go somewhere in Egypt where there's a guaranteed grain supply, he goes somewhere else that he knows that there's going to be the likelihood of the water table being high enough, even during this drought, that he can dig wells and keep his animals watered and any crops that he plants watered. Now, in order to do all of this, he has to get permission from the locals. So he goes to Gerar, which is the main city on this particular water shed. It's a couple of miles probably from the Mediterranean coast. It's not very far from modern-day Gaza. And he approaches the king, the leader of this city and of this watershed, whose title and name is Abimelech. My father is king, is what that name means. This is probably the son or the grandson of the Abimelech that Abraham had relations with close to a century earlier. And so verse number 6 of Genesis chapter 26 says, so Yitzhak settled in at Gerar. So he gets grazing rights, he gets water rights, and kind of settles in until the rains come back. And then he'll be able to go back to his other tent city sites, which will be more viable once the rain pattern starts again. Now, verse 7 says, when the men of the place asked him about his wife, Rebekah, he said back, oh, she's my sister. Now, why does he do that? Well, the scripture tells us, for he feared to say, she's my wife, thinking lest the men of the place should kill me because of Rebekah, because she was attractive in appearance. Now, we don't know how much age difference there might have been between Yitzhak and Rebekah. We know that he was 40 when they got married. She might have been in her 20s, is my guess. She was unbetrothed and unmarried up in Mesopotamia. And so we are now, him being past 60, because that's how old he was when the twins were born, they were 15 when Grandpa died, and so this whole story seems to be after that. So it is clear that he is now in his upper 70s, perhaps in his 80s, and so she's a little bit younger than him, perhaps, but still a knockout. Those genes in this family line are just something else. And so he panics, thinking that these Gerarite people that he doesn't know will murder him so that they can have his wife. But his twisted logic says, if she's only my unmarried sister, they'll be nice to me because I have the final say for any betrothal offers because I'm the head of the family that she's part of. So, same thing that his father had done when they came here. And the same thing happens again. Verse number 8. When he had been there a long time. Now, how long is a long time? Well, as I already told you, he's probably already experienced a couple of dry years, and now he's settled into this place with watering rights, and so he's planted a crop, and he's irrigating that crop, and he's running all of his animals. So it's been at least several months, I am sure, that he has been here. So he'd been there a long time. Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked out of a window. So he lives in a town, a city, that has walls, and some of the housing, particularly his palace, is high up above the walls and has a way of looking out over the countryside. And it would appear that Isaac has his little tent city set up just outside the walls. And so Abimelech, you know, looks out and he sees, you know, his tenant, if you want to put it that way, Yitzhak. And oh, and there's Yitzhak's sister, Rebekah. And then it says he saw Yitzhak laughing with Rebekah, his wife. Now, that's our English Standard Version here. And I think that they are perhaps being too polite in using the language here. The word is, in fact, the same word where Yitzhak's name comes from. That idea of the caught laugh in the throat. But it's also a euphemism for sexual intimate contact between a husband and a wife. And so I think it's at this point that the New American Standard tackles this a lot better because they have the word caressing here. So he basically sees, Abimelech basically sees Yitzhak and Rebekah not acting like brother and sister, but acting like husband and wife. And he's, first of all, shocked, and then he's angered. Because, well, of what he himself expresses in verse number 9. So Abimelech called Yitzhak, so basically summons him into the palace, into the main building of Gerar, and said, "Behold, she is your wife." I'm sure there's more conversation than that. "I saw you. I saw what you two were doing together. She is not your sister. She is clearly your wife. How then could you say she is my sister?" Now, I don't know, but I suspect that this Abimelech may have heard some story from Daddy Abimelech or possibly Grandpa Abimelech about a foreigner who once came and camped near their city, and how this foreigner lied about the relationship he had with his own wife, and that Abimelech of that time actually just assumed that he could marry this beautiful woman and took her in to the palace, and how all of a sudden a curse descended on the whole country, on everybody, and no babies were able to be had for a while. And that the only thing that broke that curse was finding out in a dream that it was because this man's wife had been taken away from him. That's the story of Abraham. So my suspicion is that this Abimelech may have heard that story from the previous Abimelech. And now he can't believe it's happening again. So Yitzhak says to him, "Well, it's because I thought lest I die because of her. You know, I'd get murdered. Which we critiqued Abraham that last time, that he made the assumption that these people didn't have any morals whatsoever, that they would murder a foreigner just so that they could take the wife of that foreigner for their king's wife. So this Abimelech says back to Yitzhak, "What is this you have done to us? One of the people might easily have lain with your wife, and you would have brought guilt upon us." See, that's one of the things that makes me think he knows the previous story. If something had happened, if someone in our community had treated this woman as someone other than your wife, we might have had the curse of God come down upon us. And so Yitzhak gets rebuked by a non-believer, just like his father Abraham was rebuked by a non-believer. And then Abimelech makes sure that we're not going to get in the same problem that happened previously. Abimelech warned all the people. So he puts out a general warning to his entire community, his main city, and probably all the places up and down his watershed, because he basically controls the watershed of this river that runs past Gerar. So Abimelech warned all the people, saying, "Whoever touches this man or his wife shall surely be put to death. You leave them alone." And so, verse 12, Yitzhak sowed in that land and reaped in that same year 100-fold. So his crops do super, super well. When Jesus tells a story about the production of grain in a land that was sown, he talks about some of it produces 30, some of it produces 60-fold, some of it produces 100-fold. So it's the top of the tier of production. It's really, really good. So basically for every grain you plant, you get 100 grains back. That's a really good turnaround. And so the Lord blessed him. The Abrahamic blessing is evident. And the man became rich, and he gained more and more until he became very wealthy. Now, he'd already inherited everything from his father. He's adding to that. So he is getting even more and more powerful. He had possession of flocks and herds and many servants. As I already suggested to you, he's got hundreds of people working all of these animals and planting the crops for him and keeping Tent City up. And so I think Tent City has probably got a couple of thousand people in it, bigger than the actual stick-built or clay-built town that they're right next to, Gerar. And so the Philistines, the people who live in Gerar, who live in this region, they envied him. They're like, "Wow, I wish that we would do as well as this guy." Verse 15 sets the stage for the next part of the story. Now, the Philistines, that is the people living in this area that will later be called Philistia, the Philistines had stopped and filled with earth all the wells that his father's servants had dug in the days of Abraham, his father. When Abraham originally came to Gerar, after the whole incident with Sarah and Abimelech, Abimelech said, "All right, you have my permission to go and set up your tent city and have your water rights and your grazing rights anywhere along my watershed." And eventually, that's how Abraham ended up at the place called Beersheba, which is way up on the watershed from Gerar. Once that particular drought was over, Abraham went back to his other tent city sites. And eventually the these Canaanites living in this region, they came through and filled in all of those holes, you know, because they're a little bit of a danger if they're not being used all the time and maintained. So all of that has been closed up again. That was important for the next part. Verse 16. And Abimelech said to Yitzhak, so the new Abimelech, go away from us, for you are much mightier than we. So he basically says, there are too many of you people living right up next to our town. I need you to move upstream. I want you to go up the watershed and stay away from us, because there's just too many of you. So Yitzhak departed from there, and he encamped in the valley of Gerar and settled there. So he moves maybe a day's journey up the watershed, settles in, starts running his animals. Verse 18, Yitzhak dug again the wells of water that had been dug in the days of Abraham his father, which the Philistines had stopped after the death of Abraham. And he gave them the names that his father had given them. So he now realizes, well, I'm following the same pattern as my father. So here's an obviously filled in well. We'll open it back up again, and I'll give it the same name that my dad gave it. But then something happens. Verse 19, when Yitzhak's servants dug in the valley and found there a well of spring of water, the herdsmen of Gerar quarreled with Yitzhak's herdsmen, saying, hey, that water is ours. So we now start running into the jealousy, the envy of the locals. So they move in and say, hey, that water should come to us. We're the locals. We have priority here. And so Jacob decides that he's going to name that particular well Essek, because they contended with him, because the word Essek means contention. And now that that water has been taken over by locals, it says they dug another well, and the same thing happened again. They quarreled over it, that one also, so they gave it the name Sitna, which means enmity, a state of warfare. So he's moving farther and farther up the watershed of the Gerar stream. And he moved from there, dug another well. They didn't quarrel over that one. He's now far enough away from where the people of Gerar do their herding and do their little farm crops and things like that, that they don't fight over this well. And so he called its name Rehoboth, saying, for now, he who is has made room for us, and we're going to be fruitful in the land. Rehoboth has the idea of plenty of room, living space. And then we come to this, verse 23. From there, the next time that they needed to move the tent city, you know, once the animals had cropped enough of the available grass, they move up the watershed a little farther, and guess what? They end up on the exact site of Beersheba tent city. Now, it's been a while since it was used by Abraham, but it is recognizable. I mean, Yitzhak would have recognized it. But there at that special site, verse 24, he who is appeared to Yitzhak that very same night that they arrived. And he said, I am the God of Abraham, your father. So this is God's first clear appearance to Yitzhak after his father's death for sure. And he says, fear not, for I am with you and will bless you and multiply your offspring for my servant Abraham's sake. Now, I need to correct myself real quick. It clicked in my head. We already read just a little while ago about God appearing to Yitzhak. This is the first time he appears to him at Beersheba. And so the message there is the same that he's already given him before. The blessing is resting on you. You are the seed that will be multiplied. You are the seed that will inherit the land. And because God has appeared to him at this special place where Yitzhak had been when he was a kid, in fact, I think he was probably born here. Verse 25 says, he built an altar there and called upon the name of he who is and pitched his tent there. So he kind of settles in to make this one of his special tent city sites. And because he's settling in here, his servants dig a well. They start clearing out the place that is obviously where a well has been before. And then this happens. When Abimelech went to him from Gerar, so he's going to get a visit from the landlord. It's about a day's travel, I think, from Gerar up the water drainage line until you get to Beersheba. So Abimelech comes with Ahuzet, his advisor, so his right-hand guy, and Phicol, the commander of his army. Now, that's interesting because we've seen this name before in relationship to the original Abimelech. And this also seems to be a title. Phicol literally means big noise. It seems to be the title of the commander of the fighters. So we have an official visit from the king of Gerar. And Isaac's response to this official visit is this: why have you come to me, seeing that you hate me and have sent me away from you? I mean, why are you here? You told me to leave, so I left, and then your people kept pushing me farther and farther up this drainage stream until I ended up here. So why? Why are you here now? And they said, we see plainly that he who is, and they're probably using the title El Elyon, God Most High, or maybe El Shaddai, God Almighty, or God of the chest, personal God. We see that this God that you worship has been with you. How do they see that? Because he's getting big-time crop production, and his animals are doing so well, and everything seems to go perfectly for him. So they say, we see plainly that the Lord's been with you. So we said, let there be a sworn pact between us, between you and us, and let us make a covenant with you that you will do us no harm, just as we have not touched you and have done to you nothing but good and have sent you away in peace. You are now the blessed of he who is. So this is what they're looking for. They're looking for a treaty between them. Because they also understand that whatever is on Jacob can also kind of spread out beyond him, on Yitzhak. whatever's on him can kind of spread out and touch them as well. That's one of the parts of the Abrahamic blessing, remember. I will bless those who bless you and curse those who curse you. So they want to be on the good side of this guy. So they want a treaty of cooperation and also a treaty of mutual non-aggression. They're not going to be mean to each other. Verse 30. So Yitzhak decided this was a good idea, and he made them a feast, and they ate and they drank. So they have a meal together, which is the sealing of a deal, often happens with a meal. And then in the morning, they rose early, and they exchanged oaths. So they don't just simply make promises to one another. They swear before God, if we don't keep the terms of this agreement, may God do bad things to us. And so Yitzhak sent them on their way, and they departed from him in peace. And that same day, Yitzhak's servants came and told him about the well they had dug, and they said to him, "We found water." And he called it Sheba, which is from the Hebrew word for an oath. So he just took an oath with these guys, and so he decides to give the well the name Oath, which, of course, when you put it with the word well, beer, you end up with Beer Sheba. So he called it Beersheba, and it's been Beersheba to this day, Moses says. Now, we already know that this site had that name once before, because the original Abimelech and Abraham entered into an oath with seven animals sacrificed to seal the deal. And so it became the well of seven and of the oath. And here it again is, coming back to that same name.